Fuse Box.
Hey, hey, you know who was hot?
Huh?
Shirley MacLaine.
Are we doing the thing? Is this a thing we're doing? Shirley MacLaine.
Hot, bro.
Oh, okay, so we are doing a thing.
No. Well, yeah, sort of. No, I mean, okay, so I caught The Apartment the other night with
Jack Lemmon and Shirley MacLaine.
Yeah. So I remembered how hot Shirley MacLaine was back in her day, and it made me think.
Did you like it?
Huh? What, the movie? No, man, it was absolute shite, but...
But Shirley MacLaine was hot.
Right. And it, you know, and so it got me thinking about other hot chicks from the old black and white movie era, you know, and...
Vera Miles.
Oh, hell yeah. Oh, Dorothy Dandridge.
Sophia Loren.
Oh, of course. But see, I was thinking more along the lines of the not-so-obvious ones, like the ones you don't automatically think of when you...
Rita Moreno?
Rita freaking Moreno. Yeah, like that. Oh, Eleanor Donahue.
Miss Landers.
Miss Landers. Oh, from...
Leave It to Beaver. The Beaver's teacher. Yeah. Sue Randall.
Sue Randall. Miss Landers. Oh, man. Definitely. Yeah, bro, Miss Landers was hot.
It was good to be Beaver Cleaver.
You got that right, bro. Oh, gee. So, folks, this right here is Fusebox 270, Widdershins, and you, or maybe we, should stop trying to set the clock back 100 years.
It's my clock. It's a beautiful clock. I control the clock. I think people want me to control the clock. Stay where you are. Go back where you came from. I'm warning you, I'll sue. I'll call the National Guard to your town. The FBI will raid your home. I was chosen by God. Make America great again. I have a mandate. A big, beautiful mandate. The best mandate. It's my mandate.
You know, you better watch those springs, bud. I think you're going beyond the limits of control and sanity.
Emails! Benghazi!
Yeah, I always thought he was wound too tight and the wrong way round.
Proof positive, Mr. Keynes. Proof positive. Hello there, friends, and welcome in to this, the 270th edition of Fusebox, constructively titled Widdershins. I am your contents dislodged during shipping host, Mark Rose, and over there, always knowing which way the polarities are aligned, the Emperor of EQ, the Yin to my Yang.
Easy, bro.
Milt Keynes, everybody.
Hell, you know what? I actually know what Widdershins means. I looked it up.
Bravo, Mr. Keynes, bravo.
Yeah, it means something counterclockwise or in the wrong direction, yeah?
Well, someone clearly ate their Wheaties this morning.
Soaked in vodka, as always. But yeah, I do my research. Sometimes. When I'm really bored. Or half in the bag.
Widdershins is indeed a term for something sincerely out of order or the wrong way around. And I think we can all agree that the times we are having to endure at present are sincerely and severely out of order.
With a hot and heaping side of bass ackwards.
And maybe a garnish of Koyaanisqatsi.
Okay. You lost me there.
That's just the title of a brilliant documentary from 1983. Its title comes from the Hopi Indian word for life out of balance.
Yeah, that sums it up, I'd say.
Yeah, so we've got a few things that nicely illustrate that unfortunate trend on this show, friends.
Not that we need them, since, you know, Every day is a hot, steaming pile of what the fuck did that orange crap bag do today situation. By the way, has he invaded Altoona?
Not yet, but they are looking a bit apprehensive these days, Mr. Gaines. Mm-hmm. So we'll take a gander at a few unconstitutional and dictatorial things like that. But we also offer, as we've been endeavoring to do this year, an attempt to balance out Trump's daily asshattery with a few truly great things that are happening around our big, beautiful globe in a segment we like to call Have You Heard the Good News? Yes, and but also, too, perhaps. Our good yet twisted buddy, 42nd Street Pete, offers his slant on a Western from 1967 that is something of a reverse Magnificent Seven, I'd say.
Reverse, you say?
I do. And I did indeed, sir. Yes.
Well, it kind of fits with the way
things are going now. Yep. Yeah, that's true. All this, plus a pink and perky pangolin that sings show tunes.
Really?
No.
I love a parade.
You know, the term grindhouse has a lot of definitions floating around out there, and many are just, well, speculation, written by folks who, for the most part, weren't anywhere near 42nd Street, or even worse, not born during its heyday. Grindhouse Resurrection Magazine sources its articles and reviews by and from the folks who were very much there, and in many cases, worked on the very films being discussed on its pages. Each issue boasts 96 pages of wall-to-wall ephemera. And you can pick up a copy at 42ndstreetpete.net and see for yourself why it has the special place in history that it truly does. Grindhouse Resurrection Magazine, available at 42ndstreetpete.net right now.
So that's what you call being eccentric. Well, I have another name for it.
TheFuseBoxShow.com.
Back at you, friends. And before we get underway, I wanted to take a moment to mention the passing of a gentleman who had quite the influence on a lot, if not all, of what Gerald McQuinn and I have been doing in our creative radio endeavors, which all started with a little fledgling radio station in Tampa, Florida, WMNF, that at the time we approached them in 1979 with our crazy ideas, was only on the air a few short weeks. And Gerald and I marched in there with our little reel-to-reel tape of a bar scene that takes place in another dimension in a place called Quaymet, a cross between 40s film noir and maybe Blade Runner. We played this crazy, nuts, insane thing for then programming director Rob Lori. WMNF was only running from dusk to dawn at that time, as they hadn't received approval for the 24-hour broadcasting. And they were awaiting the final word from the FCC. So it was all a bit tenuous, to say the least. But I'll never forget the thing Rob told us after listening to our little demo there. He looked at Gerald and I and said, "Guys, I don't know what the future holds for this station, but if we're on the air, you'll have a show." And that started everything, friends. But it's a story for another time. Anyway, our very good friend, Rob Lori, left this realm on his way to the next great adventure. But he will always be in our thoughts, as he believed in our show even before we knew we could really even produce it.
Wow. Very cool. I didn't know Rob personally, but I'm sorry to hear he's passed on, bro.
Yeah, thanks, Mel. Yeah, I heard this sad news on Democracy Now!, a program that's been running for, well, nearly 30 years now, hosted by Amy Goodman, and she reported on his passing on the show and played a clip of she and Rob from 2009 when Democracy Now! Was doing a remote from WMNF.
Station's still going, though, right?
Oh, certainly is, and is well-supported in spite of these ridiculous times. Funnily enough, the 09 clip that Amy played was Rob talking about how the whole public radio model was not really the best. He pointed to Europe as having a better support system for public radio, and one that is funded through the countries themselves. So, anyway, our deepest condolences to Rob's family and all concerned. He's another one that will be sorely missed, friends. Truly. Well, first up is an absolutely insane move taking place in... where else? Say it with me, friends. This report was submitted to us by our senior foreign correspondent, Gregory Wilson. Five street art installations in St. Petersburg will be painted over, Mayor Ken Welch announced on social media. Evidently, in a valiant attempt to forestall this ridiculous notion, the city wrote a letter to the Florida Department of Transportation asking for an exemption from the state's directive that cities keep their streets, quote, free and clear of political ideologies, end quote. The city's transportation and parking management director, Evan Morey, made the case that the five installations create a strong sense of community and make roads safer.
And they're just plain cool to look at, especially after 2 or 9 Yoo-Hoo and vodka martinis.
Well, be that as it couldn't. Welch wrote in his post that the request was denied. He said that after consultation with the city's attorney's office and, quote, considering the implications of keeping the street art murals in question, the city determined that the street art murals must be removed under the state's order. And here's the kicker. Welch also said that city personnel will not remove the artwork, but rather that the Florida Department of Transportation will remove it at the city's expense.
Wait, what?
Yep. Just another example of blandizing America, ladies and gentlemen. Mayor Welch went on to say, the city remains committed to working with our community to find lawful ways to celebrate and express our values in the public realm. While these specific art murals will be removed, the spirit of what makes St. Pete a special place can't be suppressed by legislative fiat, and we will find meaningful ways to express our shared values.
Okay, well, good. They can start with a proper harpooning of the bigoted idiot who started this crap.
Yes, sir.
What do you suppose this political ideology of erasing human expression is, you fascist moron?
Do as I say, not as I do, Mr. Keynes. The affected murals include a colorful prism intersection, a rainbow pride intersection, a University of South Florida-themed crosswalk at USF, and a Black History Matters mural. Justin Hall, a Tampa-based secretary for the Florida Department of Transportation, wrote to St. Petersburg that the street art must be removed by September 4th. He wrote that, should the city reverse course and decide not to comply, the department will pursue withholding state funding.
Oh, man, that tactic sounds familiar.
Exactly. And the state has been ordering street murals removed throughout Florida. As a matter of fact, on Thursday, Orlando Mayor Buddy Dyer said the state, overnight and without warning, painted over a rainbow crosswalk that was intended as a memorial to the victims of the 2017 Pulse nightclub shooting that left 49 dead and 53 wounded.
And you know what? If they were ever stupid enough to try doing something like that here in Portland, There'd be state official skin bags hanging from streetlights, bro.
You know what? It's even safe to say that the ODOT folks here would have a thing or 12 to say about that as well.
By the way, that rainbow street crossing was repainted back by local citizens. So, the fight is on, bro. And of course, you gotta ask.
What the fuck, Florida?
And as a complete turnaround, the way things are disputed in civilized, non-quasi-fascist places around this globe, there's this, submitted to us by Jody Lorimer. As you may know, in Iceland, fairies are a big deal.
Well, yeah. I mean, Bjork, right?
Yeah, close enough. But fairies are such a big deal there that in the past few months, there have been protests to stop a road that might disturb them. The new road would slice through the Oftanis Peninsula. Sure, I'm mangling that perfectly. Near Reykjavik. And the protesters say the little elves who live among the rocks would be disturbed. This might seem odd for a modern nation like Iceland, but most countries have some sort of supernatural superstitions. Hey, New Jersey has the chupacabra. The South has Bigfoot.
Texas has Democrats.
And Iceland has fairies. Yes, Icelanders at least entertain the possibility of their existence. In one 1998 survey, 54.4% of Icelanders say they believed in the existence of elves. The poll is fairly consistent with other findings and with qualitative fieldwork, according to an academic paper published in 2000 titled The Elves, Point of View by Vladimir Hafstein, who now is a folklorist's professor at the University of Iceland. In fact, when asked about the elves, the Icelandic Road and Coastal Administration provided a 5-page standard reply, one that they have had at the ready since the question is so common. Quoting here, "It will not answer the question of whether the Icelandic Road and Coastal Administration employees do or do not believe in elves and hidden people, because opinion differs greatly on this, and it tends to be a rather personal matter," the statement said. Benjamin Radford at Live Science also points out that it's not just the elves that are being cited as reasons to protest the road. It's easy to exaggerate the conflict and to characterize the protesters as crazy, lava-hugging environmentalists who are willing to be arrested to stop an imaginary elf village from being bulldozed.
Yes. Yes, it would.
But, Mr. Keynes, disturbing the fairies is only one of several reasons offered by the protesters for why the road construction should stop. Many challenged the legality of the road. The lava fields were officially protected in 2009 and may or may not remain so today, while others lament the impending destruction of a culturally significant local landmark, with or without resident elves. And elves or not, the whole thing has blocked the road's construction for months now, according to the Associated Press. The project has been halted until the Supreme Court of Iceland rules on a case brought by a group known as Friends of Lava, who cite both the environmental and the cultural impact, including the impact on elves of the road project. The group has regularly brought hundreds of people out to block the bulldozers.
Attica! 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 Attica!
And now, with and without further ado...
Hello. I'm here to bring you the good news.
Some great news. If you feel like you're losing your minds, friends, this reporting from Science Daily says we can now restore memory by recharging the brain's batteries.
Well, that's good news. You know, I'm always losing those 12-volt connectors.
French and Canadian researchers have shown that faulty mitochondria directly drive memory loss in dementia. So using a new tool to boost mitochondrial activity in mice, they restored memory performance, proving cause and effect for the first time. The work points to mitochondria as a powerful target for therapies that could slow or even prevent neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's.
In mice? Those must be some pretty damn teeny tiny connectors.
Which I'm sure they could easily find at Radio Shack.
Oh, dude. Really?
And this little fact. In case any maganoids out there were wondering, here's something from Bloomberg. America's crime wave isn't happening. The United States is living through its safest stretch in half a century. Murders are down 42% year on year, the steepest drop in four decades, while serious violent crime is down 22%. The gap between perception and reality has never been wider.
And if you don't believe us, we'll happily send ICE officers over to explain it to you with tasers.
Alrighty, friends. Well, we've got another gooey, greasy, grimy dive into the grindhouse world with our buddy 42nd Street Pete. And this time, a look at a Western that spins a classic theme pretty much backwards, I'd say.
And now it's time for another Grindhouse Minute with 42nd Street Pete.
Okay, let's take you back to 1967, where Pete's cutting class because Pete can walk to the Embassy Theater 2 miles down the road in Orange. And there's a Western playing called Payment in Blood. It's an early spaghetti Western. Think of the Magnificent Seven in reverse, where the seven are all bad guys. These are all like guys from the Civil War. It's this colonel played by Guy Madison. I think it's Colonel Blake, who's completely out of his mind, still fighting the Civil War and massacring everybody. And he's got like seven henchmen who do it. One guy's got a bullwhip. One guy's got spurs. One guy beats people to death. One guy's a sharpshooter. You know, you get the idea. So it's up to this character played by Edward Burns, you know, kooky from 77 Sunset Strip, whatever that fucking thing was in the 60s or 50s. So he's the guy who has to infiltrate them and tell them that he knows where this gold is, that Confederate gold. So there's a whole bunch of shit going on. And basically, there's another woman who comes in and she says, oh, I thought we were all Yankees and stuff like that. And she hooks up with Blake. Well, they decide to hit this town. And what they do is they lure everybody out of the town, all the men. And they already know that Burns is a traitor and they already did shit to him and they already killed the sheriff on their side. So basically all of Blake's men are on the rooftops. And when the posse comes in, they massacre him. Because the alternate title for this film is Seven Winchesters for a Massacre. And let me tell you something. The body count for this will surpass every Friday the 13th put together, every Halloween and every Texas Chainsaw Massacre. They fucking kill everybody. And then one of them gets blown off the roof, the Indian-like guy or something. So then they go to get the gold, and they're in this cave, and the remaining townspeople are hot on the trail. So the Burns character has them in there, and the one guy, they dig up the thing, and he goes, we're going to split this up, and Blake shoots him, and he goes, no, this is Confederate money. So Burns tricks them all into killing each other, and then the townspeople take out Blake. And then it ends with he was in cahoots with the woman who came into the camp, and they split the bounty, and they go off to ride off to get something else. Obviously, everybody wanted to replace Clint Eastwood because he was such a big hit over there. And they kept digging up these American actors who basically, you know, their careers either had died on the vine or they were looking to do something else. And Burns did two other films, Any Gun Can Play and The Red, The Blue and The Yellow Gold or something like that. But he didn't stay too long. And he also said that Guy Madison was another guy who had expatriated out of there because he couldn't get work. And sometimes Guy was really in his cups and you couldn't really work with him on certain days. Had to send him home to dry out. So that's our Grindhouse Minute for today.
This has been another Grindhouse Minute with 42nd Street Pete.
Yes, sirree, that whole drinking on set thing is kind of legendary in cinematic history.
W.C. Fields, anyone?
Or Tyrone Power. Richard Burton, perhaps. And, of course, the king of the drink kings, Oliver Reed, who literally drank himself to death during the filming of Gladiator.
Bro, they had to use CGI and body doubles and previously shot but unused footage to finish the film. Oh, and Richard Harris, speaking of Gladiator.
So many others. Oh, Judy Garland, of course. Anyway, you get the picture.
I saw what you did there.
It's a boozy business, indeed, this entertainment racket.
I have no idea what you're talking about. Ah. Oh, yeah. That's what Daddy needed.
And with that cry for help, we'll make it last call, but not before thanking our intrepid contributors to this fantastical episode, the lovely and talented Jody Lorimer, and the talented and lovely Gregory Wilson. Thanks, guys. Thanks, as always, to 42nd Street Pete for yet another depraved dip into the deep end of the grindhouse pool. And thanks as well to the Magistrate of Meters, Milt Keynes, for ticklish technical assistance and lewd and lusty libation wrangling. Where's my beer, by the way?
Got you covered, big guy. Don't forget, folks, join the in crowd on our Patreon page at patreon.com/thefusebox show. Sign your ass up right now. Get free crap, get exclusive content, get early releases. So get going and get busy.
And yes, but also, visit the Fusebox store at the top of our website, thefuseboxshow.com. Shop, buy, repeat. All kinds of cool Fusebox swag awaits. So get yours.
We might even have a few of those leftover Epstein files laying around too, you know.
Lengthy prison sentence included with every purchase.
Apply to infected area only.
A spanky new Fusebox whiskey mug goes great with the morning beverage of your choice, friends.
Well, I need another Fusebox church flask myself. Can't have too many of those.
All too true indeed. Let us also liberally slather thanks all over Grindhouse Resurrection Magazine for their continued support of our show. Another blockbuster issue is forthcoming, friends, so keep those bloodshot eyeballs peeled. And lastly, of course, we thank you, both of our listeners out there, for pushing play on this and all of our shows, as we do so appreciate your time and aural indulgence.
You said oral.
I knew I couldn't get that one by you.
Oral.
Anyway, I have been, or tried to be, your above-board citizen with below-the-belt leanings, host Mark Rose, saying, until our next cartoon.
Oral.
Oh, for the love of fuck.
Fuse box.